Welcome to Leadership Bites with myself, your host, Guy Bloom. This is a leadership podcast where I have conversations with colleagues, I chat with guests, and sometimes they'll be just me talking. You can connect with me at livingbrave.com, and when you enjoy the episode, subscribe and please tell everyone. So, Sharon, it's fantastic to have you on this episode of Leadership Bites. Welcome.
It's lovely to be here, Guy.
And, you know, from my perspective, I know who you are because I invited you on, and we had a touch point a little while ago when we were doing a conference for Iris.
That's right.
Iris, a fantastic company I love working for. And it'd be great just to hear, in essence, who you are and what you do and just what the focus of your role is before we kind of take the conversation further. So over to you for that.
Sure. Well, as you said, my name is Sharon Davis. I'm the chief executive of Young Enterprise. We're a national enterprise and financial education charity. We're part of a junior achievement network, which is really a network of over 100 countries across the globe that's really committed to entrepreneurship, financial education, and work readiness education.
So just to bring that to life, because I said to you, I won't ask too many questions before we get on the podcast, just because then I come at it from a position of already knowing and probably don't ask the right questions. But for the layman, just what does that actually mean, that you help youngsters in various stages of their life, or it's around them getting jobs? Explain it to the layman.
I mean, essentially, it is really helping young people build those critical skills to learn to earn and manage their money.
Right.
Enterprise education, financial education, integrated. You can't really have one without the other. So learning to earn, so really developing those critical skills, whether that being entrepreneurship within your own, going up and setting your own business, but that's not always the case. Or also being entrepreneurial or enterprising within someone else's business. So developing some key skills. Now that can start at five. You can introduce children to enterprise at five. We have a Fiverr challenge where they'll have £5 to make an enterprise for a month. They give the £5 back and they keep profits. So, and we have some great examples of Fiverr challenges, but the key is really helping young people to develop those skills so they can go out into the world, be prepared for the world to work. And it's changing so, so fast. And we feel that that's really important. And to date, you know, we were set up in 1962, and so we'll be 60 years old in 2022. And over that period of time, 4.5 million young people have benefited from our programs.
I'm really fascinated by that. I've got two children who are sort of polar opposites of each other. And of course, if you are listening to this, kids, in due course, I've not judged you and pigeonholed you, just in case they hold this up to me in a decade and go, well, you'd already decided what we were going to do. But yeah, one of them is very academic and, you know, et cetera. And I would hazard a guess would go into that space. Don't have to, son, it's okay. And you know, the other is not in that way inclined, but they are as smart as each other. The other one's got a street smart about him, he's got a humor about him, they're just built differently. And I could imagine that the one would go down that atypical academic route, but the other would move into that. He actually would benefit from understanding, you know, that enterprise mindset, and yeah, it would be a different set of things, but he wouldn't benefit from. So I'm quite interested in how that would play out for different personalities. Actually, Guy, it's not as simple as that. It's not about, you know, any age, any educational background. It doesn't matter what you're going to become. The purpose of it still fits. So it's quite interesting.
And the point you raised there is really important nowadays, because an enterprising mindset, particularly, you know, even for academics, is really important. That growth mindset, the kind of normalizing of failure as part and parcel of the learning process. It's a step you need to order to discover new things, to innovate, to iterate. I think that's really important. And that enterprising mindset in the environment that we're living in right now is really important. You know, we need hope. We need to have a mindset which is about growth, which is a kind of about better understanding, because it's better understanding which will uncover I guess Obama talks about third spaces, doesn't he? That third space understanding will only come from a different mindset, not one that kind of just stays in one space.
So I normally go backwards to go forwards, but I'm just going to, which is to learn a little bit more about you, but I'm just going to pause here for a little bit longer while I'm following this thread. Do you have a demographic? Is there an age? Is there an age range? What is the way you're aiming those bullets, so to speak, for who it is that you're after?
So we don't. We work with children from the age of 5 right through to undergraduates at 24, providing financial education and enterprise education. We also work with educators, whether that be teachers. We support teachers in terms of developing resources for the curriculum. We work with youth workers. Anybody who is in that professional space who are able to support young people to develop those skills. The movement is about helping young people develop those skills to learn to earn and to manage their money. So it's much more of, children learn their attitudes about money at the age of 7. So, you know, you can imagine, you know, if you've come down from space and you're kind of in a supermarket and you're standing behind a big person, if you're a child, and that person gives a card to something, have all of this shopping on a conveyor belt. They give a card to the cashier. The cashier says, would you like cash back? The person says, yes, please. And they get like 45, 40, 50 pounds cash back. I mean, how does that work? You know, you have all of this stuff and you give a card and then you get this, you know, so financial education is really important. If someone doesn't explain that to somebody, you're in a situation where, you know, you really do. It really is important to learn the value of money and exchange of money at an early age.
So I had this very linear moment with you a moment ago where I went, well, one child who I think might be that way would go off and sort himself out, and the other one might need, you know, some guidance in that space. So already I'm learning, well, actually, that's not really the lens, is it? You know, the lens is a much more holistic approach to, well, it doesn't really matter, Guy, that's not the point. It's actually that knowledge and that skill is probably a requirement for any human being at any stage in their life. And that mindset is contextual to where you are. But actually, the mindset is, the knowledge around it is inherently true. You would just apply it in your own context.
Absolutely.
There you go. You see, I've already shifted my thinking. So that's helped already. So brilliant. So Sean, I'm often of the belief that understand the role that somebody inhabits, it's really valuable to understand how somebody got into a role. So what's that journey that got you into the position that you have today? And you know, you can bring that to life to a greater or lesser degree, but you know, from that being born up a mountaintop and you know, wherever it was that you were to that role that you were at, what was that journey? What were the stepping stones?
It's really interesting, actually. It has been quite an interesting journey. So I was kind of born and brought up in a very rural part of Cheshire. So my parents were tenants on the Duke of Westminster's estate. So my dad was a tree feller. Mum was four kids. There's four kids, three of my three brothers and myself. And I left home quite early. I was about 16, 17. I knew I was gay early on. My parents were really cool about it, but I knew I wasn't going to have a great time living in rural Cheshire at that time. And so I kind of decided to go and live outside of the family home. My parents were really supportive, but they were supportive and they kind of said, well, off you go then. That's what you want to do. I was like, kind of like, oh. So I kind of had quite
Did you put up a bit of a fight there, parents?
Yeah, at least for a show. At least put out a little, can we have a little bit of a dialogue? But no, they were always very good. They were very, very good. And so I had quite a transient kind of 4 years, really, kind of, you know, 16, 17, right through to kind of, you know, 19, 20. And I ended up living in Birkenhead and working in Birkenhead in Quicksave. And I was a cashier.
I don't know why that's funny, but sorry, that just made me laugh.
It was probably funny because of the nylon. I always remember the nylon uniform, and you'd sit on the chair And you'd like have this static, because it was like, so it was just like, yeah.
It's actually just pausing for a second. It always makes me giggle, because I used to have a job at Morrison Supermarket, you know, and I was behind the meat counter. And that's hilarious in some respects. But most people have come from, at one point in their lives, when we were trying to figure out to turn left or right or whatever, you know, it went, you know, it could have gone either way for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. And this is exactly where it happened to me. So there was, if you remember Quick Saves, they would have a number of concessions. So you'd walk into a kind of a hallway, or a, you know, big hallway, and you'd have like Shoe Saver and Liquor Save, all these different concessions. And what would happen in Birkenhead North End, which is the Quick Save I worked in, there was about five or there's a gang of lads that used to come in, throw eggs, do big skids in this this lobby area, because you do big skids because it was like shiny floor plus an egg, you know.
It's a given, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so there were, you know, if you're a cashier, you'd have to take turns in cleaning that up or brushing in the lobby, all of those things. So it got to the stage where if I would try and get to them before they would do it, have a chat with them, talk to them about anything, bikes, Liverpool Football Club, Everton, Tranmere, obviously Tranmere being the Birkenhead club, anything at all. And it got to the stage where if I was on duty, they wouldn't throw the eggs. They'd be like, oh, where's that girl? And they'd have a little chat, and we'd have a little chat. And one day, the lady who's a manager from Liquor Save said, I'd like you to meet somebody because I think you're great with kids. I'd like you to meet somebody. I'm a part-time youth worker. And she brought along this youth worker who said, look, you know, this lady had said, you've got some great skills. They're really transferable. Why don't you come and do a night working in a youth club, which I did and I hated. And never went back again. Anyway, he comes back. He literally comes back. And I'm sat on the till, minding my own business, processing all this stuff. And he's standing there and he said, look, I know you didn't like it. Just give me one more chance. He said to me, give me one more chance. And the one more chance was, why don't you try doing some detached work? And detached work is street-based youth work. So you're working with young people, arranging activities for young people who are either can't access youth clubs, because there aren't any, or they choose not to. And that was the beginning of a real love affair. I loved it. It was an estate called the Nocturum Estate in Birkenhead. So I did a little bit of work on the Nocturum Estate, a little bit of work on the Woodchurch Estate, and did it on a voluntary basis, then managed to get some part-time paid work. From there, I accessed a training course, got really some great support from Wirral Youth Service, and started to think about actually doing this full time. So I went to John Moores and got in at John Moores and got my youth work qualification. And from there, got a full time job eventually in Cumbria, working with young people who are excluded from school. So fast forward to the situation I'm in now. I'll just move back a little bit. I was working for Wirral Youth Service, which then became the Connection Service, and they gave people opportunities to do a master's. And I said, I don't want to do a master's in education. I'd like to do an MBA. And they said, well, why do you want to do that? And I just fancied the idea of doing something different. So and with that MBA, I wanted the opportunity to, understand the operations of a charity, which is how I ended up working as an operations director for Young Enterprise. I guess the thread that's run throughout my career since being, you know, 2021 is that break that I got in the Quick Save from the youth worker called Terry Hall has just been, I've just felt it so deeply within me ever since, that it's a debt I always want to pay forward, because I would not have been in the situation I'm in now, which is a huge privilege, without that person who came back and said, give me one more chance.
That's amazing.
And for me, that's the essence of why I do what I do.
Do you have a sense of why, just interestingly enough, being in the social club was different to you to then, inverted commas, working outside? I mean, obviously the environment's different, but in what way? People that were already there, where there was no challenge to it, or what was it that made it different for you?
I don't don't know what it was. Maybe I saw more of me as a younger person in some of those young people that were kind of either couldn't access or chose not to access. Maybe I saw some of that, sometimes behavior that's presented doesn't belie the kind of real reason, does it? So, you're kind of either hiding something or you're protecting something or you're defending something. And I think, the more I got to know some of those young people, which was a hugely privileged position to be in. So we'd go on residentials, we go on outdoor education residentials, and, we'd do five a side on a Friday night from like 7 till 10, those kind of things were really great opportunities to see young people open up. And they became so much more than what they were given credit for on first hand by lots of people. Say, well, all these kids hanging around on the streets, you're talking about, this was, the very early 90s. So, in the Merseyside. So you can imagine the kind of culture or the kind of narrative that was about young people. And I guess for me, I learned so much about community work and I learned so much about leadership in those formative years because, particularly around how you engage community, how do you solve community problems? You don't do that by doing stuff to people. You listen. And, that taught me a lot. It taught me a lot, particularly because my accent was different than theirs. So, that stood out quite a lot. And particularly like mums or dads of those in those communities, it took a while to really get under the skin. So you had to listen and be present and be consistent, be there when you say you would be there, and do what you would say you would do, because they'd had so many people that had kind of been and gone and let them down.
One of the the pillars that I talk about in my Living Brave concept and the book and all that kind of stuff is connection. And when I talk about connection, there's the obvious connection of the physical body being present, eye contact and that kind of stuff, but the underlying connection is contribution, which is that willing to contribute outside of your own need. And I think that's possibly one of the, and what I kind of sense I'm hearing in what you're saying is that people often trust when they perceive that your contribution or what you're doing with them is outside of your own need. You haven't got a quota, or you don't have to, you're not asking me to sign something so you get something from me. And actually I'm probably not used to having somebody whose intent is one that is, I don't know if I want to use the word that pure, but that clean might be a better way of that it's not maybe that I'm suspicious of you, I'm suspicious of this set of behaviors. Because actually I don't inherently meet that.
That's such a great way of explaining that, such a great way, because what I learned, Guy, was that some of those communities are the most resourceful and resilient. And we talk about communities and think about communities within a COVID setting. I think you're right. I mean, there's assumption that there's a deficit model very often, and my experience was very, very different. And I think to your point there, I think people respected the fact that their view was respected.
I've got a pretty good friend of mine, James, who will prick his ears up if I tell him to listen to this episode of the podcast. And James is one of those guys who's one of the most intelligent people I've ever met, one of the most savvy people I've ever met. But he didn't go to university, and he didn't go that route. He had a very challenging childhood, and he ended up working in an industry in London where he does various things around security work, and he has people that work in the security space. But I don't know, you'll laugh now when I say this, but he's maybe not as young as he was, but he's still a young man, says a man who's 50, his story is one of, you're a CEO. You're as competent, as capable as anybody I've ever seen at the top table of any organization I've ever been in. And if you'd have been born into a different family in a different part of the country and had a different route, well, actually, interestingly enough, that may have actually been smoothed off you. That may have actually turned you into something less, strangely enough.
Yeah.
Or, of course, you'd have been top of your tree in a, he's top of his tree in the space he is now, but he'd have been top of his tree in that commercial space. And it really was me back in the day when I met Jones, it reinforced my belief that you're right. It's you have to step outside and go, people that very often are in relatively mundane roles, you go, but that person runs a football club and they're part of this and they've got they play the oboe or they do that. You know, I mean, these people, across the gamut, I think it's so easy to dismiss. Mm-hmm. And I'm fascinated by barriers that, and I think maybe that's another thing I'm hearing from you, that is when you talk to people, there's a barrier, something's happened, you know, be it cultural, be it the family life, be it whatever it is, but something's happened. And if I can remove that barrier, or this organization can help to get that person, maybe not remove it, but allow the person to handle it, to deal with it, because things don't get forgotten, then what can I release? What's the genie I can let out the bottle?
I absolutely get that. And I think if we think about your enterprise, our why as a charity is that meaningful opportunities combined with the appropriate support, that might be a volunteer, it could be a teacher, it could be an enterprise member of staff, to build the critical skills and mindset can change young people's futures. So it's all about value add. If you think about sometimes, for me, you know, we talk about kind of skills gaps in young people. You know, for me, it's not about skills gap, it's about opportunity gaps. So, you know, sometimes it is about removing barriers. In my experience, it's also much more about providing those meaningful opportunities, because if they're meaningful and the young person reflects that they're meaningful, although it doesn't have to be a young person, or the person reflects that they're meaningful, very often than not, that person then makes meaning. And if they've got somebody who supports them to reflect on what they can do with that and next, can make the massive difference. And again, I go back to my own experience. It was somebody who was walking alongside me that said, well, okay, so what could you do next with this? Okay, well, we'll pay you 3 hours a week. So rather than you doing your voluntary work on a twice a week, we'll pay you from 7 till 10 on a Friday night. It built from then. It was somebody just being alongside me saying, I value you enough.
So again, correcting my own thinking, or adding to it maybe rather than correcting, there might be an element of helping somebody with a barrier or something that's there for them. But then there's this other side of life that says, well, actually, if I give you the opportunity to experience and do stuff, and as a person who's in a consultancy space running his own business, I've come to understand, do more stuff, because the more people I speak to, the more connections I have, then the more opportunities come up. So actually I now realize, oh, what do people that are successful do? They do more stuff.
Yeah.
And more stuff happens. They have more failures, but then they have more successes.
Yeah.
So what I've heard there is you're kind of going, well, actually, if we present people with opportunities, there'll be some successes and failures, but the more they'll learn, the more they'll experience, and the more likely something is to hook their interest, or, you know, to et cetera. So,
the key is meaningful, and the key is meaningful, not how I or you would describe it, but the person has to feel it's meaningful.
So the experience isn't dictating an output. It's giving you an opportunity to have an experience from it that means something to you.
Yeah, that you value enough to say, I would like to do something else, or I would, you know, do something with it. And again, sometimes you need that mentor or coach or supporter, teacher, volunteer, or whatever, that enables you to reflect. And I think those two things, opportunity and support, I think very often, you know, for me, you know, I've talked about my own experience, you know, it kind of, you know, it changed my life. And I've seen that happen so many times in other forms, really. So, you know, it works.
And picking up on that, there was a show that somebody was just talking to me about the other day, and I remember watching it, which was where they got kids in schools to swap So the private school kids went to the state school and vice versa.
Okay.
And this show was about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was fascinating because, you know, the never the twain shall meet kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they took, it was just in the paper the other day, and they took a group of kids and they swapped the state school with the private school. It was all very nice, but one of the kids from the state school went to this private school, which I can't remember now the name of, but it's almost irrelevant because it's the story that's important.
Yeah.
And he loved it. And the teacher, the headmaster, said, you know, when you're talking to me, can you just sit up straight? And the guy went, yeah, of course. And he loved wearing the uniform. He said, it makes me feel like James Bond. It makes me stand up. And he recognized. Now, some of the other kids from his, you know, didn't recognize it and have that same experience, but it resonated with him. And he threw himself into everything. And he did his homework. And they went, this is really good, but you're in the bottom sets at everything at your school. And he goes, yeah, because I haven't got a table at my house.
Mm.
You're like thinking, oh my gosh, it's opportunity. And hey, the point is of the story that they offer him a place at the school.
Mm.
And you don't see if he takes it up. They just offer him a place because obviously there's some sort of scholarship fund, whatever. But of course, the news thing, which I was glad I picked up on, was the fact that he'd taken it up and he'd been there for years. And that's a great story. It's like winning the pools in some respects. It's not going to happen to everybody, but it's just opportunity.
Yeah. And it was meaningful to him.
Meaningful to him because other kids who went there didn't like it. They didn't like it. They didn't enjoy the environment. They were great kids, but they didn't like it. It did not connect with them at all. They were happy to have had the experience, but very happy to go back. He didn't want to go back. Now, that's because picking up on that is the meaning. You can't dictate all go there and all have a great experience. No, all go there and we'll see where that takes us, right?
Yeah.
It was just fascinating to pick up on that. And I think that's what I've heard in what you're saying.
It's a brilliant example.
Yeah, we get our own stuff from it. So in terms of, I mean, I wasn't talking about COVID, obviously, before COVID. And when it came, I was saying, well, it'll be gone in a minute, so it's not worth talking about it. And here we are today.
Here we are.
Yeah, my forecasting on that one was a little bit off. Has it curtailed? Has it changed the dynamic of how you act and what you do? What's it meant and what's it been for you that may have made things harder or have there been outcomes from it that have surprised you?
Yeah, well, I guess the delivery model that we have worked with for, you know, 50-odd years really has been that face-to-face support, predominantly in schools, with volunteers from the world of work coming in to help young people to kind of process their experiences, that learning by doing. So whether it's setting up and running an enterprise, etc., or doing some financial education workshops. So it's been that relationship between the teacher or the youth worker, the volunteer, young enterprise, and the young person developing those experiences. So all of a sudden, when schools have had to move to remote learning, last March, when that happened, you know, we did have to really think about how we delivered our activities. You know, we have a program called Company Program, which is, I think some of your listeners who are Young Enterprise alumni right back from, to like, you know, 1960 odd, will have undertaken Company Program, where you set up and you run a business over, an academic year. So we had over 80 competitions happening across the country where young people were, you know, presenting their company and essentially you work through a process where eventually you have the UK Company of the Year, and the UK winning Company of the Year goes to Europe and competes against 30 other countries to and we'll continue to do that even though we're not in Europe, by the way, because we're part of Junior Achievement Europe, and we'll continue to do that. So all of a sudden, you couldn't have those physical competitions. And so it really, you know, it really meant that us as an organisation needed to have that enterprising mindset about how could we continue to provide young people with those meaningful opportunities, that appropriate support that could continue to change their futures. So we moved to digital, we moved to online, and we had, you know, 80-odd finals that culminated in the UK final, which Steph McGovern emceed for us in her own home. Bless her. Steph McGovern is a Young Enterprise alumna. So, you know, and a very proud alumna. So she was great and she emceed it for us. But that was just one example of us needing to be, you know, enterprising in our own way. And I think that's what we've continued to do. I mean, ideally, our programmes, you know, are blended. You know, you have that experience of volunteers from the world of work and teachers supporting young people to deliver those activities. But now over 80% of our programmes are now accessible from on a digital online basis.
So that's, I suppose that's been a thing that we've all experienced, which is that transition of suddenly realising that, well, it can't be done online. Oh, apparently it can, you know.
Yeah.
Which, one of the best memes I saw actually was somebody going, you know, that job that you've been told for 25 years that you can't do from home. It turns out apparently you can. So yeah. We've moved into that space. Is there a set of, will that stay with you now? If things, you know, if the jab comes out and things, you know, return to inverted commas, a new normal, but will that kind of, would you shift back into a different format, or will the two run in conjunction? What, do you have a sense of what the future might look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think lots of people are concerned, aren't they, about the amount of screen time that young people are being exposed to right now. So the ideal would be to have a blended offer. So you're still doing those physical activities, but you've got that blended offer, because I think digital skills need to move into, become integrated into employability skills. So, you know, when you're marketing, you need to understand algorithms, you need to understand how to kind of position your messaging. All of those digital skills that so far has been kind of, you know, added as an extra needs to become integrated, because that's the world of work that the young people are now facing. So I think, you know, even, you know, when there's jab, I think for us, we will continue to provide those meaningful opportunities, but we'll look at how we can really help young people to prepare for that fast-paced changing world of work. Because there are industries that are thriving now, aren't there, that weren't.
Oh, it's been fascinating. I look at my kind of client list, and I was, you know, I sank to my knees a little while ago and did a little prayer of thanks to the fact that my clients were in certain industries.
Yeah.
Because some industries, it's like all my eggs had been in that basket, not knowing a future, I'd have been up the proverbial, you know, without a paddle. Yeah. Other industries who I happen to, just by luck, happen to be working in, they've cracked on. Because they are building things and they're digging holes for the water mains, and they're, you know, these things have to go on. So as you're right, thriving is interesting, but they've kept moving, and some of them are having great successes because it's shown the nature of what they're about. And
absolutely. Yeah.
While other people have not thrived, but their metal has come forward, I think, and shown them for what they really are.
Yeah, well, if you think about, we a lot of our online ordering, you know, a lot of the green companies are doing really, really well. Yeah. And I just think, you know, when we're thinking about young people and opportunities, the great thing now is that we can have volunteers who can digitally volunteer. So you might have a company who is, you know, based in Leeds or based in Birmingham, and we want some volunteering opportunities in Blackpool. Now, that would never have happened. But now, actually, those digital opportunities, so young people get firsthand experience of different industries that we'd never have been able to do before. So I think there's some benefits that we need to keep hold of, moving on from COVID.
What is it that keeps you, I wouldn't say awake at night, but what are the things that maybe give you some either anxiety, or the things that you go, that's not like it should be? And that might be, is that at a volunteer level? It's hard to get people to connect, or when they do, they love it, but by God, the battle of getting the buggers on board is, you know, what is it? What's the stuff that if you could just wave that proverbial magic wand, you would shift?
I think my one of my biggest anxieties is the amount of pressure that teachers are under right now. They're under huge pressure. They're doing an amazing job. I've got a 17-year-old here, and and somebody that's in university at 20, and you know, 17-year-old's just gone into sixth form, and you know, is you know, the teachers have turned around on Monday, turned around to be able to just give him what he needs, and they're under huge pressure. And I guess my worry is, there will need to be a focus. There'll be a need to be a focus on core subjects, on core curriculum, and yet the importance of preparing for the world of work, you know, enterprise education, financial education, is just as, if not more important right now than ever. And so I guess my anxiety is finding ways that we can support teachers to incorporate these, you know, which are critical to helping young people build their own preparations. Because then we've, on the other hand, we've got employers who are saying that young people aren't ready. They're not ready when they're coming out of, you know, academic education. But somehow we have to find that third space, don't we? Because teachers are really being forced to, you know, on the recovery curriculum, and employers are saying they're not ready, but we have to find that third space of getting them ready.
And it's bad on me, but I've only really started to pay attention to my kids' homework recently due to the fact that they're at home in a way, yeah, that I'm, you know, where there's obviously there's homeschooling going on, and I look at some of the stuff that is being taught and I go, who cares? You know, so what? You know, and I'm not even going to get into it, but I have to look it up and go, so the surface of that particular shape is called that. And what I'm interested in is that, yeah, there is, and I'm sure it would be it's everybody's dinner conversation with a bottle of wine, and, you know, don't even get me started. But the reality is, what are we really teaching? What do kids really need to know? Rather than the validation of their learning, what is actually something that says, actually, that's, as an employer, if they turned up understanding that, I'd be a heck of a lot happier.
And if you speak to teachers, a lot of teachers really, really appreciate that. They really want to do that. You know, but we have a system which is largely knowledge based. And so, you know, if you said to me, what would be really good? It would be really good if we had parity of esteem in terms of the value that skills have, and that whole kind of review of the role that skills have within the UK's education system.
And my little boy, one of them is autistic, and that's made me pay a lot more attention to the different dynamics of children in a class. So in the one class, you know, you've got a kid who's dyslexic and et cetera, et cetera. And so that academic bent goes to some kids. They have that natural propensity and off they go. Thanks very much. But I do suddenly then realize, it's not that the teachers don't care, but there's so few of them. Forget COVID. Just there's so few of them, and there's 30 kids in a class. And now that I've had to homeschool two little maniacs, let alone 30 maniacs, you go, yeah, it's interesting how that distribution curve of, there are certain things that get rewarded and certain things that get left to just flow through because it's easier. But that kid with dyslexia, whose dad's a builder, who says, you want to see him on the building site, what he's like? And you go, interesting. And he's almost in a holding position in the school.
Yeah.
Whereas there is so much work that could be done with him that would mean by the time he was 18, he could be up and ready with his own building company and ready to take on the world.
Yeah. But yeah. There are, you know, some great, you know, you've got Careers and Enterprise Company. They work very, very closely with schools, providing that careers education. But I think there is, you know, we need to keep that up. We need to kind of, throughout COVID, really remember the importance of it and the importance of the medium to long term for young people. You know, of course, it is important to be undertaking the core curriculum and all of those things. And teachers, you know, again, this isn't about teachers who are doing an incredible job. It's that longer term. How do we prepare?
Resources and their capability. Yeah. If there were 15 teachers in the classroom, they'd do anything you want. You know, so my statement wasn't a judgment against teachers. It's recognizing how the heck do they do it.
Absolutely.
30 of them, a couple of TAs, a teacher at the front, that full distribution of different personalities and academic capability. And you go, I wouldn't want to do it. I used to think it was quite, I was like, how hard can it be being a teacher? Yeah, well, I've corrected that mindset.
Yeah, I can imagine. You're the rest of the population.
I saw a fantastic meme actually on the side of a car that said, "You lied to me. My child is not a joy to teach." Which,
oh, that is fantastic.
Which I thought is perfect. I think there's a lot of people who have suddenly had a revelation of, it's a completely different kettle of fish. So just as I'm alert to time and just respecting your time, is there, if people want to engage with you, is there engagement that you want from the commercial space, the business world, from people? Is there something that says, actually, Guy, if I could ask people to be interested in and take an interest in, this is what I'd want, this is my wish list, what do you have on that?
Definitely we prepared a new strategy which started in January 2020 called No Time Like the Future, and it essentially had three goals, and it's pretty COVID proof really. And the three goals were to provide a million financial and enterprise education opportunities by 2023. And to do that, you know, we need to mobilize 40,000 volunteers, young enterprise alumni and teachers. And that's going to require an investment of £16 million. So, yeah, we are absolutely, I mean, I think it's critical now more than ever, those opportunities. So if you're interested by what you've heard, then obviously contact us via our website. If you just Google Young Enterprise, you'll see our website. You can contact me via Twitter. So I'm at sdavis1971, and you can just follow me, and if there's any direct messages, happy to respond. I'm on LinkedIn as well. Because, you know, it's going to take up, this is a movement. It's going to take us all. It takes a village to raise a child, but it takes a community, I think, to really enable them to prepare for the world of work. And, you know, it's going to take employers, volunteers, teachers, various voluntary organisations to really help young people to continue to build on that. I mean, they are resourceful, they are resilient, they are adaptable. They're showing all of those great skills already. Mm. We just need to help them continue on that journey.
Okay. Well, Sharon, thank you so much. As with all these things,
thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Well, you know, it's trying to talk about a lot of things, or, you know, you can talk about one thing and then, you know, the podcast is over. So, and I've educated myself. I've seen my own ignorance show itself quite quickly with you a few times. And then I've gone, aha, mental note to self. That's what it's about. So it's been great. So I'm going to press the stop button. We'll talk for a few minutes afterwards. But just on a personal note, thank you so much for coming on. And it's been terrific.
Thank you.
That's it. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please share so others get to hear about us, and subscribe so you keep up to date on new episodes. Also visit livingbrave.com if you want to connect with me and find out more about executive coaching, team effectiveness and changing culture. Oh, and of course you can buy my book Living Brave Leadership on Amazon. So on that note, see you soon.